I'm Kristen Bengler, and our mission with this podcast is to help you and the people who love you through the shock of diagnosis and treatment.
I'm Eva Shea, and the incredible woman whose story you're about to hear is a nurse practitioner in San Francisco who has dedicated her life to caring for patients more vulnerable than you can imagine.
Her name is Natasha. This is a story about what happens when you have breast cancer, told in real time.
Last time it was just before chemo number 3, and before you had all of this craziness with dehydration and all of that. And then a miracle kind of happened that we can talk about later. And so I'd love to know, like, are the chemos different for you? Because you have them 3 weeks apart, and I had them like every other week. So I'd love to know what your progression is like on that.
Oh, that's such a great question. And it's interesting. I remember back when I was doing chemo teachers as a nurse to patients, you know, never having gone through this, sort of arrogantly telling them that each treatment would be the same. And so however they reacted to cycle 1, they would react exactly the same to cycle 2. And there were no surprises and it was predictable. I should have been fired for that because that is just not true. Cycle 1, I was learning how the meds worked. I was excited to start treatment. I was proud of myself for showing up and not being a complete wreck. And I think I was expecting a really hard time and it wasn't as bad as I thought. Cycle 2, I don't really remember. I think the side effects were definitely more pronounced. Honestly, I don't remember much of cycle 2 because cycle 3 took me down hard. I had this just like maybe a 5 or 6 out of 10 chronic nausea the whole time and fatigue where, you know, I would go for a nap at 3 in the afternoon and wake up at midnight, which I don't think quite counts anymore. And then I went down psychologically. My taste buds seemed to change almost overnight. I had people talk about a metallic taste. And I still have this. I just can't taste anything. And so I was aware that I wasn't aware for a while, actually. I just went down and I went to bed and I made a pit in my bed and I stopped eating. And then I got like really bad acid stomach. So I was throwing up anything I ate. I started throwing up fluid that I just couldn't keep anything down. Then I got the return of the, you know, the diarrhea from hell. And so talking about this now as a nurse, I'm like, well, yeah, you were heading for really severe dehydration. Sure. As me, like 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was just heading down and was getting really quite sick. And one morning, I think I had one brain cell left that fired and said, if you don't make a change in what you're doing, this could actually become pretty serious. And it was one of those things. I think I knew if I called the triage nurse, they would say, come in.
Right.
And I didn't want to get out of bed. But luckily, I followed through. The infusion center I go to has an urgent care, which is great. You don't have to go through a regular emergency room. They just take care of you the minute you show up. It was really amazing. And, you know, there are some colleagues of mine who work there. I was talking with another nurse practitioner and they were just like, the cliche that nurses are the worst. They're like, this is ridiculous. My kidneys were heading. I mean, no, this is a little dramatic. I wasn't heading to kidney failure, but my creatinine was high, which meant my kidneys were not happy. And they just filled me up with fluids. And they're like, we're not going to let you leave until you start peeing. That shows us that you've actually got enough fluids in your system. And it took almost 4 liters to get me back. My potassium was completely out of whack. My magnesium was out of whack. I mean, I'd created a pretty sick person really just in a couple of days, which was frightening.
I hate that for you. How long did it take to infuse that?
Oh, I was there for 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. It took a while. And then afterwards, they were very smart. They basically said, look, how about rather than Wait till you get sick. If we know this is how you're going to respond to the treatment, let's just schedule you a hydration date. You know, it's interesting. I feel like I metabolize the chemo slightly slower than other people. And that may just be like, I don't know. I don't get side effects until about day 8, 9, and 10.
Wow.
And I know other people get them quite a bit earlier. So they had this great idea of like, let's just put you on the schedule and come in and we'll just prehydrate you and check labs. Because one of the hormonal meds that I'm on, the Perjeta, does cause really quite significant diarrhea. So like, you're probably going to get that anyway. So why don't we just hydrate you? But while I was there, I talked with my oncologist and she said, you know, you're on the standard anti-nausea regimen, the Zofran, some Phenagan, some Compazine. Like this. She's like, it just doesn't look like this is working for you. So she switched everything around. She put me on a small dose of Decadron, the steroid, in the morning, and Zyprexa, known as olanzapine, which is being used increasingly for nausea. I wasn't aware that was being used that much. And Zyprexa at night with Zofran if I have nausea in between. And that's the miracle for me. I feel like a human being.
Yeah, you look great.
Yeah, it's like the main side effect right now is just, you know, no taste buds, but I haven't had any nausea. I have a little bit of diarrhea, but I have, you know, Imodium can take care of that. It's night and day. I mean, I was in a really dark place after cycle three with the side effects, and I caught my mental health really deteriorating. I was having a lot of why me's. I was a couple of times announced, I'm not doing anymore. I cannot do three more of these treatments. And I knew I didn't really mean it, but it felt empowering to say it.
Sure.
You know, and living alone when you throw up, I mean, this is kind of a disgusting comment, but then you have to clean it up because your mom's not coming to clean it up. And it was just, oh, yeah. And it's, you know, this is a kind of a tough time of year for me. Sometimes our 25th wedding anniversary is coming up and I know it's not a wedding anniversary, but I'm, you know, still married and on paper. And it was, yeah, it's incredible how quickly mental health for me can go down when my physical health is going down. And now that I'm on the Decadron and the other medication, like I was lying in the hammock this morning. I actually joined a gym, which is unbelievable that I even would think to do that because I'm not a gym person. But I was like, and some of this I recognize is positive effects of the steroid.
Sure.
But today I didn't take it because I don't want to rely on it. And I doubt I would have any nausea anyway. But yeah, the taste buds, I'm not sure if that's something that you went through. I'm really struggling with the combination that the steroids making me hungry, which is good because I need to gain weight, but I cannot find anything that's good to eat.
You know, my taste buds are still not okay. I made the comment last night when I was eating something healthy for me. You know, I found myself using more salt, more pepper, more spices to get things to taste okay.
Mm-hmm. I've been leaning towards texture because it's the only pleasure. But then I realized yesterday, actually, and I know we're not supposed to eat sushi, but whatever, I had sushi because I thought that would be an interesting texture and it really wasn't. And then I came home and a couple of hours later, I'm eating sliced peaches out of a jar and like, it feels exactly the same and tastes exactly the same, like a cold slivery thing. But it's hard. I get around about midnight, I get super hungry and I don't know if it's the I think it has to be the steroid because even though I can't taste, I'm still trying to keep up my calorie intake. And I confess the other night I had DoorDash McDonald's delivered, which I didn't even know was a thing you could do. And I wish I didn't know, but it was just, I was just craving to like fill this hungry pit that isn't getting filled. So
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about my ice cream intake. I was having, because it was during the pandemic, I was having Handel's ice cream delivered to me. That's and of right. course, you have to order at least $20 worth for them to deliver it.
Right.
And so it was always sitting there calling to me from my freezer. To back up just a second, for the sushi, like the reason that people aren't supposed to eat sushi has to do with it being raw fish and it could make you really sick because of your immune system being messed up.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. that is something that I think every cancer patient is told. And what's great is I actually was in a meeting with some Japanese oncologists and I asked how they managed, and they thought it was the stupidest thing they'd ever heard.
Yeah.
So who knows? I find the same with alcohol. I was told by my chemo teach nurse, zero alcohol. When I left the urgent care I was talking about earlier, the nurse practitioner there was like, well, you know, you've like, go home and have a glass of Chardonnay. You did a really good job coming in today. And I was like, you know, how are we supposed to figure our way through this?
Well, I think that when they're doing the teach and when they're giving you the instructions, they're telling you by the book what they have to tell you. And then when you go to urgent care and people are like, you know, just go take care of yourself.
Yeah.
So needless to say that chemo 4 was, I don't want to say a walk in the park, but you had some things in place, right? By the time you got there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been relatively easy compared to 3. So it's almost every cycle is different. Like I have number 5 coming up next week and I hope the miracle holds, but bring it on. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was taking some notes of what's happened over the past weeks and before we met today, and just thinking about how people use the phrase, you know, it's a roller coaster. And I think it gets overused a little bit, but this really, it felt like the proverbial roller coaster. It's like, yeah. I don't know what's around the next turn. I don't know if I'm up. I don't know if I'm going down.
We were talking about this before we actually started recording, is everybody's different.
Well, that was one of the things that, you know, I wanted to sort of make sure it gets covered today, because I think it's important for people listening, is that they talk about everybody's journey is different. It's also the way that you're going to react to the chemo, as Kristen's saying, but also the medications that go along with it. So I kind of had to advocate again pretty hard to get my anti-nausea regimen changing. Like taking more of something that's not working didn't seem like a very good plan to me.
Sure.
And yes, it's very easy to check the check boxes of like, this is what we give almost everybody else. But, you know, I had to get them to really think outside the box, and it's worked. So, you know, I guess once again, it's like the message is like, you don't have to put up with feeling sicker and sicker and sicker.
Yeah. You don't have to be the standardized, televised, movieized. You can have things changed. And 5 years ago, you and I would have had the same treatment.
Right. And I'm not sure if we have even one drug in common.
I don't think so. I think I had the Zofran.
But I'm thinking of chemo drugs too.
No, I had AC and Taxol.
And I'm having Taxotere and Carboplatin.
Right. They didn't know to look at those things before. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, you know, and I could do some research and come back and tell us how much of there's also oncologist's choice. There's a little more wiggle room, I think, with the treatment regimens. And, you know, there's a Facebook group that Kristen and I are members of, and people will often post their regimen. And I'm amazed how many different regimens people are on. It's really shocking. It's interesting. It reminds me of when I was working with Doctors Without Borders in Malawi on the cervical cancer project. One of the oncologists who worked alongside us had a completely different chemo regimen than is acceptable in the so-called developed world. And there would be endless back and forth about, you know, Doctors Without Borders doesn't want to finance or to help support something that hasn't been sort of standardized
sure.
in Europe and the US. But the oncologist in Malawi was like, these are my patients. This is what I've seen. There may be something inherently different about the way people from Malawi handle this chemo, but I am not changing to your regimen.
Wow.
And yeah.
And so your hair, let's talk about how amazing your hair was. I think that like mine's still growing out.
Yeah.
And the cold capping.
The cold capping, I had a haircut a couple of days ago, which I don't think is, I got a big discount for being the chemo girl with the haircut. It was very sweet. I have not been aware of losing hair from my head at all. Everywhere else is gone. And I really feel so strongly that it should be covered by insurance, almost enough to start writing letters and making phone calls and being annoying. Because I think initially I felt guilty having the luxury to be allowed to have a machine on my head to save my hair, which is such, as I was putting that sentence together, I was like, that's such a ridiculous situation to
save your mental health.
To even have to say that. Is it a vanity thing? I don't know. I mean, I trip up over that, but what it allows me to do is not have to talk about my cancer if I don't want to. I can pass in the world as, I can't say normal, not that we're abnormal, but not as a patient.
Sure.
And, you know, what are the downsides? It's a couple of $1,000. It extends my treatment day by about a couple of hours because they literally freeze your hair and the follicles, and there has to be a cooling period afterwards. But it was a very nice gift from my dad. So I
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, to your point of going through the world and feeling like people don't look at you differently, I can't even believe I'm going to say that I had the luxury of having my treatments during COVID, but that kept me in. But when I did go out and I had lost my hair, I wondered what people thought. And then I just didn't give a shit. And I think that there's a lot to be said for your mental health and your outlook when you're going through this. And to not have to go through those things is huge.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So I am so happy for you that,
thank you.
You know, you're feeling so much better and your color is so good and you had a haircut.
I did have a haircut. Yeah. You know, my sister had an interesting way of sort of conceptualizing how she feels about me going through, you know, having cancer and going through treatment, which really resonated with me. She said, I can totally accept the fact that you're getting treated for cancer. I just can't accept the fact that you have cancer.
Wow.
And it really hit home.
That's very powerful.
Yeah. And for me, none of the side effects I've had are caused by the cancer. The cancer didn't really do anything bad except show up. I mean, I was lucky enough, there was no pain associated. And so in a way, you know, what I talk to my friends and family about is the treatment.
That's where my heart goes out so much to people in early diagnosis. Because again, everybody's different, but I see where they're going. And I understand where their heart and their mind are. And they have to go through it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting as you said that my fingers automatically counted how long since my actual diagnosis. And it's the 19th today. And my diagnosis was January 19th. So it's been exactly 4 months.
Wow.
And it feels like no time at all in a way. But it also feels like this is a world it is. It's a blurring of my professional and personal. So it's like it's all cancer all the time.
Do you feel like a different person?
I do, actually. I feel stronger, which is a very strange thing to say. I mean, I've shown up for myself in ways that I can feel proud of, except for the 2 days when I was just lying in bed being completely useless. And there's an interesting parallel of the two of us kind of going through this alone without a partner. We're doing it. We've done it. We can do this. And in the middle of, you know, the treatment, I refinanced the house, moved my ex's stuff out, started dating. Yeah, I think women are amazing. Women are amazing.
It's amazing what you can do when you have to.
Yes.
But at the same time, like, as wrecked as my body feels sometimes, I am a different person and I'm a better version of myself, of my soul, of my heart, of my spirit than I was before.
And some of it feels a little cliched, but I do have a sense of the whole, like, life's short, so don't put off something you actually really want to do. I love going to live music. And what I've also been doing the past month or so is just going to a ton of shows, however much the tickets are. And I saw Blondie the other night with The Damned, and it was amazing. And the tickets were outrageously expensive. I didn't care. It's like, you know, I don't know if this treatment's working, really. I haven't had a scan for a while. I sense it is. The lymph node under my arm, nobody can feel it anymore. But I don't know. I don't know.
And it's not that it's gloom and doom, you know, that you don't think you're going to make it. It's just, I don't take anything for granted anymore.
Yeah, that's more of what I was meaning. Yeah, and particularly time. That's what I'm not taking for granted at all. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you asked if going through this had changed me as a person, and I immediately sort of went to the personal. But I think I'm really interested to see, you know, if I get through this or when I get through this, going back to work, how it changes me as a nurse back working with oncology patients.
Yeah.
You know, and I worry that I might over-identify, you know, I might make it all about me if I don't work some of the post-treatment issues out. And I'm curious whether I'll tell patients, you know, I think there's pros and cons to that. So yeah, I'm really curious to see in a year or a couple of years' time.
I think there's a lot of value to a patient knowing you've been through what they're going through, even though, you know, the palliative care, it's obviously more advanced. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's, what I learned in teaching is that when people realize that you've been there, they're more willing to see you as human, right, and to open up a little bit more. I found that with my students.
Mm-hmm. But I worry about, like we were talking earlier about how many different treatments there are, and everybody's journey is not only sort of emotionally and psychologically different, but like practically and logistically different. It worries me a little bit that, you know, patients would try and get the treatment I had, even if it wasn't the right treatment. Like, I don't know, it feels messy, but I'm very sort of open and curious to see.
Yeah. I'm glad that you're open and curious and not fearful. So you have chemo 5 coming.
Chemo 5 just under a week. Yep.
And then 3 weeks later, chemo 6.
Yes.
And then a little time after that, then you'll have a lumpectomy.
Right. And I did a Zoom meeting with my surgeon, and if it lasted 2 minutes, I'd be surprised. Sometimes when things like that happen, I realize I'm being treated as like a nurse patient rather than a regular patient, because she, you know, it was a little bit of like, yeah, so you know what a lumpectomy is. And I do, but I'd like to hear it. You know, and one of the questions I had was, you know, given that nobody can feel these lumps, do I still really need surgery? And like, you know, everybody asks that. Yes, you do. So yeah, surgery July 19th. It's the 19th. That's my date, it seems.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. And then they want, I think she said about 4 to 6 weeks recovery and then radiation, 6 weeks of radiation from what I can understand. And then her 2 hormone blockers to round out 2022.
Wow. So they have hormone blockers for her too.
Yeah. So I'll be on Perjeta and Herceptin for like a full calendar year, every 3 weeks.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, I am so relieved that you've gotten through the horrible part.
Yeah, this cancer can take us to some dark places.
That's for sure. Well, I love you, and I'm so glad to see you looking so healthy.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Breast Cancer Stories. To continue telling this story and helping others, we need your help. All podcasts require resources, and we have a team of people who produce it. There's costs involved, and it takes time.
If you believe in what we're doing and have the means to support the show, you can make a one-time donation, or you can set up a recurring donation in any amount through the PayPal link on our website at breastcancerstoriespodcast.com/donate.
To get the key takeaways from each episode, links to anything we've talked about, and promo codes or giveaways from our partners, sign up for our email newsletter.
You'll get notes and thoughts from me related to each episode and links to the most useful resources for all the breast cancer things. So if you have chemo brain, you'll be able to just go read your email, find anything we talked about on the podcast without having to remember it.
The link to sign up is in your show notes and on the newsletter page at breastcancerstoriespodcast.com.
We promise not to annoy you with too many emails.
Thanks for listening to Breast Cancer Stories. If you're facing a breast cancer diagnosis and you want to tell your story on the podcast, send an email to hello@theaxis.io. I'm Eva Shea, your host and executive producer. Production support for the show comes from Mary Ellen Clarkson, and our engineer is Daniel Cruiser. Breast Cancer Stories is a production of The Axis, TheAxis.io.